This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele, a show that matches business mentees with exceptional mentors to provide the skills and knowledge to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. Beyond Mentorship is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Good evening to you and on this rather chill weather here in Johannesburg, and welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Mentorship here at 101.9 Kai FM as well as 91.1. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm always delighted, if not honored, to share this space with you, the beloved listeners of the show. We are literally on the second quarter of the year, and I'm hopeful that your business ideas or initiatives are taking off as they should. I'm also hopeful that through our esteemed guests that are able to share their insights and observation will certainly sharpen your action plans in a manner that yield desired outcomes. From at the political front, I'm also hopeful that you are clear in your mind as to which political party deserves your vote. Hopefully that political party will be able to redeem itself or, you know, bring the fortunes of this country afore. Anyway, before we get to the gist of our conversation, let me first express my gratitude to the team that was led by Michael McKenna. They'll be back on your radio tomorrow. Before we also proceed, let me take this opportunity to thank Craig Cuthrie, who is on the controller, and of course, Harry Seleke, the producer of the show. Gentlemen, I'm eternally grateful, if not indebted, to your unparalleled professional service. Moving along, I urge you, the beloved listener, to weigh in on our conversation, as I promise to give you incredible insights on how to leapfrog your business simply by hitting the call by and up the call by applying practical advices that will come from my esteemed guests. Of course, our SMS line is 3419. The telegram is 061-895-109. My ex handle is at Dr. Mbele. You're welcome to give us your thoughts via our on-air email, which is at highfm.com. You're welcome also to give us a call in studio, which is 0101403020. In today's conversation, I'm privileged to tap into yet another insightful individual with incredible executive outlook by the name of Clive Butkoff, who is a former chief operating officer at Accenture and now the CEO or the co-founder of Conducive Capital alongside Mitchell Adams. The million-dollar question that I will put through to him is, how do we overcome challenges in establishing and growing venture capitalism, especially in the tech ecosystem? We all know that in South Africa, we do need tons and tons of venture capital so that we're able to grow the economy. I strongly believe that if we were to have relatively large cohort of venture capital, we'll be more likely to address some of the ailing challenges that we're expressing as a community. Before we get into that conversation, we're going to take a break very quickly, and I will then get to my esteemed guests so that we can proceed with our envisaged conversation.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. Is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. We have just literally started, so you haven't lost anything to that end. Without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome Clive Butkoff, who is a former COO at Accenture and now the co-founder and MD at Conducive Capital. Good evening, Clive, and welcome. Thanks for gracing Beyond Mentorship with your presence.
Yes, thanks, Doctor, and good evening to your listeners.
Absolutely. You know, you are occupying a very strategic, if not incredibly important, segment of the economy. We all know that we could do, in as much as we could do with doctors in our corner, I would certainly do with a venture capital like yourself in my corner. Having said that, at the macro level, how are we faring as a country compared to other emerging economies such as India and Brazil? The reason I'm asking this question is precisely because we obviously have to benchmark and begin to learn how other countries are navigating this very complex environment to a point where they're able to invest in industries that are able to generate wealth that is desperately needed in the country.
Yes, thanks, Doctor. I was going to go back to rewind just for a second. So, you know, I've got front row seats to the venture capital industry in South Africa. As you know, I've been in the space for a long, long time, been building tech businesses. And it's really encouraging that South Africa is a country of immense promise. You know, we're teeming with brilliant minds and untapped opportunities. And the biggest problem is these visionary founders, they lack the financial resources and the support to turn their bold ideas into reality. And one of the reasons we've set up Conducive Capital, myself and Mitch and Adams, is to change this narrative by providing not just the capital that we desperately need, but also access to strategic guidance, mentorship, and local and global networks. So this is really a backdrop to the question that you asked. So if we look at a comparison, I mean, India is way, way, way ahead of us. You know, if you look at venture capital in Africa, about 2 years ago, we there was about $5 billion spent in the whole of Africa, and a small portion of that going to South Africa of a total investment of a $500 billion. So, I mean, it was literally 1% of the total venture capital that's spent in the world invested in true venture capital type of companies were coming out of Africa, and maybe, you know, a 25% of that 1% was coming from South Africa. So we have a major funding problem in this country, and we can talk more about, you know, how we address it and how we fix it. But most definitely, we have the entrepreneurs, we've got great ideas, we have a lot of talent in this country, but we just don't have enough capital. And that really is holding us back from a job creation, from increasing the fiscus, you know, reducing unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. So it really is a very good topic for this evening.
Absolutely. But, you know, when you listen to a number of commentators, I've had a number of them in this country on this show saying, actually, we do have enough money going around. It's just that money is not being properly managed. So in your view, you're saying we don't have enough money, and others will say we have enough money, but the money is not properly managed. Particularly when you look at how some of the state funding agencies are performing. Your take on that?
No, I think, you know, my comment specifically is around venture capital. So let's summarize what venture capital is. It is companies like myself, like Conducive Capital. We raise money from outside investors like pension funds, institutional investors, and a number of other investors to invest in high-growth startups. And what I mean by high-growth startup is that it's a company that can pay back minimum of 10x to 100x return on our capital. So there's something called the power law of venture capital, which says every one of your companies can pay back your entire fund. So let's just take, for example, we raised R1 billion. So every investment we make can pay us back that R1 billion and give our shareholders 100% return on their capital. So your comment might be very accurate about how much capital we've got in this country, which could be money in private equity. It could be money that government is deploying to small, little, medium-sized businesses. But it's not venture capital. It's not the businesses that are going to create all the jobs. It's not the businesses that are going to reduce unemployment. It's not the businesses that are going to increase the fiscus. So I think there is a lot of money in the economy. I think a lot of it is unfortunately badly deployed and lack of skills in helping those businesses. But I'm not referring to venture capital. Venture capital in South Africa is still very much a cottage industry. You know, if I count probably on both hands, there's maybe 10 true venture capital companies in the whole country with maybe a few R1 billion of assets to deploy. Where private equity, you know, there's hundreds of billions of dollars, never mind rands. But in venture capital, very, very small amount of, and that's where the jobs are being created. That's where, as I said, that is what this country desperately needs, is a less risky deployment of assets into the venture capital asset class, which can solve the issues I've just mentioned.
Now, this is a very interesting outlook that you have presented to us. I mean, you're saying venture capital has a huge potential to fast track the economic growth of this country. And I would imagine, you know, there are a lot of people who are listening to the show as you're unpacking some of the complexities and some of the requirements that are needed to ensure that any business that you touch becomes gold. I would imagine you go through a number of due diligence processes. What is it that you look for if you are about to fund a business?
So, yeah, it's a great question, Doctor. So I call it the five T's that I look for in picking a winner. So in my last fund, I co-founded Kalon Venture Partners, and I was the CEO of Kalon Venture Partners for about 9 years after I left Accenture, and I resigned from Kalon in December of last year. And the reason I resigned, we had deployed our capital, and I now wanted to raise a much bigger fund to really, for a number of reasons, to, you know, to really have an additional capital in the South African market, and to be able to deploy it into these budding entrepreneurs and these visionary entrepreneurs and help them scale their businesses, not into South Africa, only South Africa, Africa, and globally, where they can employ hundreds and hundreds of people. So my previous fund, Kalon Venture Partners, we have hired hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and really have made a significant difference to the fiscus. So what do I look for? I talk about the five T's. I firstly look for a team. You know, I want to look for the best team on the planet. You know, I won't invest in someone that's 21, never built a business before, because I don't want to pay their school fees. You know, it's very expensive for me to pay their school fees. So I want to find entrepreneurs, and preferably a team, not just an individual. You know, teams, if you want to go far, go alone. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So I look for teams. I look for teams of people, someone, and particularly most venture capital in this country predominantly invest in technology startups, which are ones that you can scale globally and not just to South Africa. And that's where you can get the 100 times return on your capital. So I look for teams that, one is the hacker, the one is someone, the engineer that can build the technology. The other one is the hustler, you know, the entrepreneur, salesperson that can sell the technology. And the last one is the hipster, the someone that can actually design the technology very, very well. So that's typically what we look for in the team. And as I always say to everyone, there's no I in team. And don't try to take this journey alone. You know, it's too hard. It's really, really hard trying to be a single founder. And we do make exceptions and invest in single founders, but we far prefer to invest in, as I said, in at least an engineer that can build the stuff and a salesperson that can sell the stuff. So someone can build it, someone can sell it, and that's the team. The second one is the technology, so the product. You know, the product has got to be, it can't be a me-too product. It can't be just another payments application or just another insurance application or just another whatever application, a retail application. It's got to be 10 times better than anything else in the marketplace. If we invest in just another me too product, it's just a race to zero. Because all you do is you compete on price, and the price gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and eventually goes down to zero. So what we like to talk about is the product's got to be at least 10 times better than anything else in the South African market. And if you look at our track record of investing, we have found businesses that really are 10 times better than anything else in the market. And they stay ahead of the market and stay there 10 times better than anything else in the market. So they don't just compete on price, they compete on innovation. The innovation velocity of these companies are very, very large. And that's how we actually, the second T of how we select. The third T is something that's very important, is a large target addressable market. So what we're saying here is, you know, if there's 100 people in our target market and we get 50 and we can start a million-rand business, well, that's not big enough. We're not going to invest in that business. So we're investing in a business like payments. One of our companies in our Kalon portfolio was Ozo, which is one of the top payments companies in South Africa. And as we all know, I mean, Ozo is on thousands of sites, but as we all know, e-commerce has picked up significantly over the last few years, and COVID was definitely an enabler of e-commerce. So that business is doing over 2 billion rand, what we call GMV, gross merchant value, every single month through the platform. And that's through thousands of merchants they've got. And that target addressable market is extremely large and continues to grow. And it's not just South Africa large, it's Africa, it's global. It can one day be, you know, a global superpower in that type of technology. The fourth T is traction. You know, as a venture capitalist, I want to see, I'm not an angel investor or a seed investor. An angel investor is someone that invests very early in a product. Maybe the product has just been built, maybe there's no customers, there's no traction. We don't invest as venture capital in that early stage. That's for angel investors, a very different asset class. Angel investors typically invest their own money. I'm an angel investor in certain investments when I've invested my own money. But the fund I'm raising now, where I'm the managing partner of Conducive Capital, we're investing other people's money. So we're raising money from institutional investors and all sorts of other investors. So that's the traction. We want to see at least 10, 20 clients. We want to see maybe R500,000 per month on an annual recurring revenue. So the businesses, I'll say the dogs are eating the dog food. You know, the businesses are solving a problem in the marketplace, and the marketplace is pulling the product out of the business, opposed to the the product being pushed out the out of the business into the market. So that's the fourth T, which is traction. The last T is the terms of our investment. We want to make sure that I always look after, and we always look after our investors' capital, that it's fair on the entrepreneur, fair on the investor, and it's a fair investment. And I'll add just a bonus T, which is tenacity. So when you invest in the entrepreneur, I don't want an entrepreneur who's going to wake up one day and say, well, this is too hard, I'm giving up. Because if they say that and they give up, well, there's no one else to hand the baton over to, and we've lost our investors' money. So that's typically when every time we make an investment, and there's a lot of other criteria we look at as well in terms of our due diligence. But those, I'd say, are the 5-6 key criteria we look at before we make any investments. Just to put just some color to that, in Kalon Venture Partners, we invested in 11 companies, and we looked at probably about 1,200 companies. So we are only investing in one in every 100 companies we actually see, we are actually investing in. Does it make the other 99 bad businesses? Not at all. It just makes them not venture capital investable business. A good business does not equal a venture capital investable good business. It could be a great business, a family business, a business that employs 5 people. But we're looking at the businesses that go from 5 to 50 to 500 to 5,000 people. And that's not every business that we see in South Africa. And that's why we only invest in one in 100 businesses.
My goodness, you've really given us food for thought. We're going to take a break as we ring up our mind on some very interesting points that you put to us around those 5 T's. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship, and I'm joined by Clive Butkoff, who is the former COO at Accenture in South Africa, and who is now an MD at Conducive Capital. Before we went to that break, he was really giving us insight, very interesting points around some of the issues they look for when they're about to invest in business. He made reference to 5 T's. One is about the team building. They're looking for a best team. So if you listen to this particular show, take these notes, are very, very important. They're looking for a team. They're not just investing in an individual. They're looking at technology. Your technology has to be upright. It's not just about a technology that is already available. It has to be in a space where it's able to be massified. The target market obviously has to be quite substantial. He's also looking at the terms for an investment, because they are looking at other people's money. So it is very important that they invest fairly, they invest responsibly. And the other thing that he brought to attention is that of tenacity, that they have to invest in somebody who believes in himself. They're not going to bring someone else who would just suddenly resign when the tough gets going. They need somebody who's in there for the long haul, who has invested his time and energy to the product, to the business vision, and so on and so forth. The last point that you raised, which was quite interesting, that out of every 100, they will invest in one company. Does this mean the 99 are hopeless, helpless? No. He says they could potentially be beautiful businesses with a whole lot of potential, but these businesses, they don't fall in that category from investment point of view. Clive, let's take a step back, because you raised another important point around the difference between venture capital and angel investor. Because are you able to clarify to the listener the difference between the two? Because I'm sure some people are confusing the two, and others would come to you as opposed to going to an angel investor, because you're not interested in obviously, if you manage your own money, you can become an angel investor, as you've said. Take us through the difference.
Yes, I mean, yeah, that's a great question. So angel investing, just for all the listeners, that's typically a high network individual. It's a person who's made money from wherever they've made their money from. Maybe they're retiring. Maybe they want to invest in a sector, and they maybe want to grow the sector. So typically an angel investor is a wealthy individual. It could be family. It could be, you know, they call it the 3 F's, family, fools, and friends. But it also could be an angel investor where they've got their own money and they want to, you know, help entrepreneurs, they want to help the ecosystem, they want to help give back and help grow the business, but it's their own capital. So if they lose it, and as I say, I'm also an angel investor, and if I lose that capital, it's okay, it's my own capital, I've made that decision, and if I lose my own capital, you know, I can fall asleep at night. So that's an angel investor. They invest their own capital, and they invest at a very early stage. So it's either an angel investor typically comes in, it's after seed, which is only an idea. So seed investor is just at an idea stage. There's no, let's take a technology business, no technology or product yet has been built. An angel investor typically invests when a product has been built and maybe there's very, very early traction or there's no traction. So it's much higher risk, but obviously the return is much higher as well. They would get in at a much lower valuation of investing in the company. The difference to venture capital, we are using other people's money. We also put our own money in as well, but predominantly it's other people's money. And we invest, as I was saying earlier, we invest at more growth stage. So what we'd call product market fit. So when the business that's solving a problem, the customers out there have come and they're buying and buying and buying the product, and the product is already making an impact. It's a painkiller. So the product is seen as a painkiller to the client. It's solving a problem. It's meeting a need, opposed to a vitamin, which is just a nice to have. It's a need to have to the client. So it's really solving a problem. So we would literally, the way I would describe it, we putting our foot down or putting gas on the fire. So the fire's already started. The business is already ticking along nicely. It's getting nice clients. And now we're just accelerating that growth and accelerating the growth in South Africa, accelerating the growth in Africa, and accelerating the growth all over the world. So that's the distinction between venture capital and angel investing. It's all risk capital. We must remember this is risk capital. And I go back to your initial comment you made, Doc, and say, you know, what do we do about it in South Africa? Why we don't have enough capital? It's because the risk appetite of South Africans is not there for venture capital. It's still seen as too much of a risky asset class. Now, we invest more in growth capital, so we definitely reduce the risk of our investment, but it is a risky asset class. You know, angel investing is far more risky than venture capital investing, which is far less risky, more risky than private equity. So I think what this country needs is pension funds and more government capital going into venture capital, where we can invest in these high growth companies, these rocket ships that can be taken all over the world. And that's the key difference is about the risk. Angel investing is higher risk, venture capital is lower risk, but still higher risk than what private equity and other asset classes.
It's quite interesting that you've articulated the extent to which angel investment is also obviously had a lower risk, even though it's still risk, but venture capital, high risk, high returns. But from transformation of the economy is concerned, the triple P, would it not be a plug that you, would it not be an environment where you draw in so that you're able to address some of the risk appetite, which government, you know, is obviously not inclined to do? The reason I'm asking this question, because there are a lot of people that may qualify, they may fall in the 99 businesses that you've talked about. You're very exclusive, 1% out of every 100 businesses. But what about those 99 businesses? What could be the role of the state in plugging that hole such that they address some of the risky aspect, which will make it a business. That will make a business worthy of investing. Your take on that?
Yes, I think, you know, Doctor, I think one of the problems that we have in South Africa, and this is not necessarily a problem in Silicon Valley. In Silicon Valley, they've got a great statement. They call it paying it forward. So what that means is really the entrepreneurs that have sold their businesses, you know, made a lot of capital, they then become the venture capitalists, and then they help the next generation of venture capitalists, of entrepreneurs grow and scale and sell their businesses. So yes, if there was more, you said up front that there is a sufficient capital. What there isn't sufficient of in South Africa is expert people and business people who have got the skills to deploy that capital to the right types of people. So that other 99 businesses that you refer to, we don't have enough skills in that environment. You need the skills to, one, to back the winners. But secondly, you know, those entrepreneurs don't have the mentorship. They don't have the webehold. They don't have the strategy experience, the marketing, sales, product development, all the other experience, they just don't have it. So if the deployer of that capital hasn't got that experience, those entrepreneurs, or let's not, sometimes we confuse the word founder and entrepreneur, and founder and entrepreneur are two very different things, even though we sometimes use that word interchangeably. What I invest in is entrepreneurs. What the government often invests in is founders. But even if they're just founders and growing the 5, 10, 20 people businesses, they still need to have that mentorship and the advice and the guidance and the support to help them grow those businesses. And we lack that in this country. We really do lack it. When you look at countries like India and countries like America and China, they've got so many of those skills that help those small businesses, those SMBs, actually scale those businesses. So they can become maybe from 5 people to 10 to 20 to 50 people. Maybe they won't be the 500, but at least they can get and they can become meaningful businesses. But so our challenge in South Africa is, yes, we've got capital, but we haven't got the skills to deploy that capital and help those businesses actually build. And that's where what we call Inconducive Capital, one of our key differentiators between Mitchin and myself, is we are the entrepreneurs behind the entrepreneurs. We've built many, many businesses. I've been involved and on the board and advising and guiding and built about 100 tech companies. So we are actually the entrepreneurs behind the entrepreneurs. We can put ourselves in the entrepreneur's shoes, in the founder's shoes, to know what are they thinking, what's the next step they need to do. We can see behind corners. We let them climb on the shoulders of the giants that have been before them, because we are those giants. We've done it. We don't have all the answers, but we've got a lot more playbooks than what they have. So if we just had a bit more skills that actually deployed that capital in South Africa, I think we'd have so much more success in building not these 5 people businesses, but significantly larger businesses than that.
That's a very interesting point that raised. And I want to take you on, Clive. You and I need to sit and say, how do we massify, how do we build cohort of skills that would enable businesses to be successful? Because you're quite correct. The reason why you're not only just putting your money, you're also partnering with the entrepreneur, because you know better. You're able to guide, you're able to provide insights, you're able to look at strategy, you look at finance, you look at marketing, you're able to look at all those things. And that is why personally with some of your businesses become very successful, because you provide a almost like a 10-key solution to that kind of business. So this is what we are missing in this country. For us to become like India, that has probably leapfrog in the IT space, we do need men and women such as yourself to try and build the expertise that is required. And this is obviously not rocket science, because you've got a number of institutions, beautiful business schools and what have you, and it's just a matter of how do we harness those competencies to be tailor-made or customized specifically for businesses that will take this country forward.
That's exactly right, and I don't have that magic potion to solve that problem, but I think it's something that the private sector and government needs to get together and really thresh out and try and find a way that the private sector can work closer with the government. And let the private sector, like the Conducive Capitals of the world, be the deployer of the capital, because that is our business. That is what we're experts at. We're experts at picking winners, and we're experts at growing those businesses into global businesses. You know, the government, that is not their core competence. And unfortunately, it's just not their core competence. It's very, very hard to have those skills to build businesses. It's very hard. You don't go and get an MBA and teach you how to build a business. It doesn't matter what university you go to. These are skills you learn. It's like riding a bike. You know, you can't tell someone how to ride a bike sitting in a classroom. You got to get on the bike, and you got to fall off the bike a few times and fail a few times and scratch your knee and get a bit of blood. And then you get better the next time until you can actually ride that bike. And entrepreneurship is like doing. It's action. It's doing. You actually have to do entrepreneurship to learn entrepreneurship. It's not something you can learn in a classroom. I present to many, many MBA schools. And taking nothing, I'm not going to mention which MBAs I present to and I lecture on, but they're great people. They're very, very smart. They've got all the capabilities in the world, but what they don't bring, they've never built a business before, and they don't bring that capability and that skill about knowing how to build a rocket ship and build that next business that's going to be the next Facebook or the next, one of those 7 big companies, Amazon and Apple, that are on the NASDAQ. That's what we need to build that next unicorn out of South Africa. We haven't built a unicorn in South Africa, and we need to build that unicorn that's going to be worth $1 billion. And we can do it. We just need the skills that can help those entrepreneurs in actually doing that.
Absolutely. On that unicorn business, let's take a break. We'll then pay our bills. We'll be back in just a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. I'm having interesting conversation with Clive Barker, who is the former COO at Accenture South Africa and who is now the COO co-founder amongst many business initiatives that he started. He's now heading Conducive Capital alongside Mitch and Adams. We all know Mitch and Adams is a seasoned entrepreneur. So the combination of the two makes magic. And talking of magic, I mean, before we enter that break, Clyde, you raised a very important point about how businesses, how venture capital could literally transform this country, in no time, provided government stick to what it knows and business stick to what it knows. Business knows how to deploy resources, and you did correct. I mean, the fact that you've done your MBA, your PhD for that matter, does not make you a seasoned professional. You have to respect people who have been at the trenches, people who had started businesses, and people who failed. And in failure, that's where the wisdom comes, because someone who's administering IDC or any of the state funding businesses or entities who has never owned a spaza shop, for that matter, will not be able to give you wisdom that comes from someone like you, because you've been there. And that is why it's important. Part of the narrative, part of the mind shift that needs to happen, I don't know, personally, this is in my next life, get to environment where people's competency is based on practical exposure, practical experience, needs to be elevated over and above that of a book or a certificate. We all need certificates at some point, but that certificate is worthless unless or until you have gone through and understood how business operate from a financial point of view, risk point of view, marketing point of view, research point of view, and all those kinds of issues. I mean, that's where you are, isn't it, Clive?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's just part and parcel of the job, and you have to understand that's what you're going to do, and the research, the risk, everything about it is in as an entrepreneur. You know, there's no guarantees as an entrepreneur, and failure is part of the learning process. You're going to fail. The question is how much you fail. You know, you fail every day, but that's okay. I always call fail is F-A-I-L, stands the first attempt in learning. So that's what you have to do every single day. You're learning new things. You're making decisions. But, you know, there's something I learned from Jeff Bezos from Amazon. You know, he calls it the types of decisions that you're making, a one-way decision or a two-way decision. And in business, if you make a decision, and particularly as an entrepreneur, if you make a one-way decision, which is a decision that you can't reverse, so who am I going to take money from as an investor? Once you take that investor's capital, you cannot reverse that decision. So you have to think really long and hard about that decision and make a very slow decision. A contrary to that is a two-way decision where you go into the door and you just go out the other side of the door. Make it quickly, because if you make the decision quickly, you can actually reverse it, you can change it, and it doesn't make any difference. So that's the difference between an entrepreneur. They've got to understand particularly what's a one-way decision, which you need to make slowly, and what's a two-way decision, which you can make very, very fast and just rewind it, fix it, and carry on. And this is one of the big lessons I teach all my entrepreneurs is, depending what type of decision you're making, either you make it slow or you make it fast.
You raised yet another important point around mentorship. I'm sure you've been, in your own personal capacity, you must have had numerous mentors, and you are now mentoring hosts of business or entrepreneurs. What is it that you look for? Maybe let's start this way. You aspiring to have a mentor, what is that you look for from that particular individual? You make reference to Jeff Bezos. Let's say he was in South Africa. What would you ask of him as a mentor?
I think, you know, Doctor, I think first and foremost, you need to understand what type of mentor you want, because not every mentor is the same. You know, if I think back to my career, I had some real, crucible moments in my career, and they were all driven by mentors that showed me the way and showed me the road ahead, and I say success leaves clues. And I looked at their success, and I studied, and I studied successful people, and I said, wow, what are you doing? If you're doing it and you're so successful, why can't I just do what you're doing? And that's exactly what I did. You know, I started working and in a clothes shop. I was actually 7 years old. And probably when I was 9, 10 years old, I saw this one salesperson. He was it was a men's clothes shop, but it was in Kempton Park, and he was just selling incredible. Someone would come in for a belt, he would sell them shoes and suits and everything, and I couldn't sell anything but a hanky, you know, I just couldn't do it. And I went, I went to him, I said, please just, you know, can I not just watch what you're doing? You're doing something I'm not doing, I don't know what to do. And he just told me, he said, with pleasure you can do that, but just don't say anything. And I listened and I watched him and I walked around with him for a couple of months, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, this is not rocket science. I can do this stuff. And honestly, and I'm not trying to blow my trumpet here, but for the next 10 years, I was like, just about every single week, I was like the top salesman in that clothes shop every Saturday morning, because I was doing it while I was at school and then while I put myself through university. And that was, and when I went to Accenture, and I spent a long time at Accenture, I looked for three types of mentors. One was a leadership mentor, one was a sales mentor, and one was an entrepreneur mentor. And I actually went to those three mentors and I said to them, will you mentor me? And there were three different people. And fortunately, they all saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And they said, absolutely, with pleasure. And they mentored me for years and years and years. And I really, if I think back why I am where I am today, I can thank those mentors that actually showed me the way. And I learned from the best. And that's why I love to give back now. I mentor many, many people. I'm on a show with some show every week with three or four entrepreneurs that we just try and give them a little bit of guidance and you know, just don't go left, go right, don't go straight, there's a pothole there, you know, don't rather go left, there's no pothole. And I must say, it gives me so much encouragement to see these founders trying to make something of their lives. And there's people that are actually, quite a few of us are actually trying to give back and actually make a difference. So what would I look for in a mentor? I have my own mentors now as well. You know, there's people ahead of me on my journey, I've got some guys in Silicon Valley that I phone and say, you know, this is my predicament, what should I do? And you know, what I tell all my companies, at the end of the day, it's not my company. You know, if I invest in the companies, it's their company. But at least listen to me and hear my view and hear my opinion. At the end of the day, it's your company. You must decide what you want to do. And when I speak to a mentor, same with me. But I'm, you know, one of the most important criteria, and I think you were referring to that, when I look for the type of person that I invest in is, are they coachable? Because I'll tell you something, if you're not coachable and you think you know it all, or you believe you have to know it all, and you don't understand that leadership is actually accepting that you don't know it all. Good leaders ask for help. Poor leaders think they have to know it all and they don't ask for help. So if you're not coachable, I'm not investing in you, because the best you can do is what your level of skill can take you. So what people don't understand is the skills that took you wherever you are not the skills going to take you to the next level. And it's quite interesting in venture capital, probably about 50% of CEOs that are, when they're CEOs, when the venture capitalist makes the investment, and when they particularly exit their companies or, you know, go to an RPO, they're not the same CEOs anymore. The venture capitalist has actually replaced them as the CEO. Not to get rid of them, they just take a different role, because they just, the person to take them from one to a 100 million rand and the person to take them from 100 to a billion rand, they're totally different skills. It's like playing soccer, rugby, and cricket and tennis. It's not just a different division, it's a different sport. So coachability, for me, I know I was always coachable. I was always prepared to listen to other people's advice. As much as it hurt me and as much as I never wanted to hear that I wasn't perfect, you have to hear that you're not perfect. And if you're prepared to listen and learn, you can go very, very far. If you believe you have to know everything and the only thing you know is that you don't know, you don't know what you don't know. And no entrepreneurs don't know what they don't know, what they don't know. And that's the risk. I know what I don't know, and that's why I can reach out to mentors to help me. So that one answer for me is, are you coachable? If you're not coachable, I'm not investing in you.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're quite keen to weigh in our conversation. Our SMS line is 3449. Telegram, it's 061-895-1019. Of course, I see my old friend here, Eric Stillerman. He's one of those that responded. Thank you very much, Eric, for your comment. He's certainly enjoying the show. As we proceed, I really like the whole point of being trainable or being coachable, because there lies in a quagmire, if you like, because if the entrepreneur does not know what he does not know, he's just doomed to fail. But you obviously have to allow yourself, you have to be vulnerable. I like the point that you just said. Sometimes being told that you're goofing around, or you're messing up, or you're not cutting it, it's painful because you're human. It's painful, but you must always understand, where does it come from? If it comes from a good heart, it's meant to build you. You just need to take it on the chin, like they say, take it like a man, go on and do exactly what you've been told, because attitude will definitely determine your altitude. as somebody who's taking guidance and supported by the likes of yourself. I mean, I would be privileged to have a man of your stature being a mentor to me, because I don't know what I don't know.
You know, it's so funny, Doctor. You know, I'm not going to mention names, but in my previous portfolio, I have a company that they put a budget together last year, and it wasn't a budget that was feasible. It was never going to happen. Their growth was never going to happen. They put too much money into research and development. They didn't put enough money into marketing and sales. I'd seen the movie before. I'd made the same mistakes before, and I tried to help them to see that, you know, maybe there's a different way. Maybe you can look an alternative. And this person took it personally. He said, I was against him, and he didn't realize it was just business. It wasn't personal. And he's never spoken to me since then. He has not spoken to me, this individual. And I think it's very, very sad. And this business, in all honesty, is just flatline. It's going nowhere, because it can only go as far as the entrepreneur is prepared to learn. And if you're not prepared to learn, well, it's not going to go any further. And it's very sad, because it's a phenomenal business. But the limitation is actually the entrepreneur. It's no one else but the entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And it goes back to a point that you raised earlier. It's about team. If you don't have team that looks at each other, that understands the business and that understand the importance of teamwork, that business is not going any far. And the other important point that you've raised is that when you've put a business up to 100 million rands, it will require someone with a different skill set to take it to a billion rands. Someone who took it to 200 million rands may not necessarily be the same person who is needed to take it to a billion rand. And you have to understand your limitations. That is why being a founding partner does not necessarily make you all in all. You obviously have to bring in people who understand the landscape better, people who have a good networking background, who understand marketing, who understand strategy, who understand all these facets of business. And you obviously have to let go. And if you let go, your business grow. Because if you personalize it, everything is going to stop. And that is a problem that I've seen. I've had an opportunity to engage with a number of up-and-coming businesses. It's all about hogging. And it's all about not understanding that in business, at some point, you have to let go. And letting go, it's such a wisdom, because there lies in huge opportunity for you. But obviously, there are risks in everything that you do. Your take on that?
You know, there's a great book that was written by I think it's a Harvard professor called Christian Claytonson, and it was called The Innovator's Dilemma. And what he did in this book, he took a few thousand entrepreneurs and did a survey, and he called it, you want to be in rich or you want to be in control? So he looked at each of these individuals, and he said, if you want to be in control, it means you'll never give up the business. You have to know everything. Try to take it to a $1 billion business. You want to be in control. You won't give up. And he looked at it empirically, and he said the people that actually gave up their role as CEO made a lot more money than the people that actually wanted to be in control, that would not let go of their business as a CEO. But I mean significantly more money. So this is empirical data. This is not Clive's opinion of control versus rich. You wanted to be rich, and you handed the baton over to someone that was more experienced than you. Those are the guys that got rich. The ones that wanted to be in control and wanted to do everything themselves, they didn't make a lot of money.
Absolutely. We're gravitating towards the end of the show. Let's take a final break. And I see my colleagues are demanding that we go take the break. Let's do it. We'll come back and wrap up on this beautiful show.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back on the last leg of the show. You know, it's amazing how time flies when you're really having fun. This is one of those moments. I'm thoroughly enjoying the conversation, for they are building enormously. And I'm quite optimistic that the listener who is either in ideation stage or already in business is picking up useful insights that have been articulated by Clive Padkoff, who is the former CEO at Accenture in South Africa, as well as Managing Director at Conducive Capital. Clive, as you're parting ways, what would you say your parting shot is in relation to the kind of a profile of a business, or mentality that is required in a business, in a business person that can literally navigate the turbulences with ease?
Yeah, I think, you know, I said about being coachable, but I think there's a few C's that I would lose, but I know I don't have the time now. But one is you need exceptional communication skills. You know, you need to communicate to the press like I am now. You need to communicate to your employees. You need to communicate to investors. You need to communicate all the time, and you have to be able to articulate your value proposition of your company. You need to have charisma. You know, you need to have that chutzpah. You just need to have that you can able to sell your vision to future employers. That they can be in a very, very cushy job, or they could come and join a startup, which is extremely risky. So you need to have that charisma that you can sell it to them. And you need that conviction and that courage. You know, you need that courage to say to someone, one of your employees, look here, you're not cutting it. You're just not cutting it. You know, those first 10, 20 employees, that every single one of them has to be an 18 plus. You need that courage and conviction to say, this is not working. You know, you need to move on. So it's hard to be an entrepreneur. It's really, really hard. It takes a lot of unbelievable courage. And the other thing you have to be is, the last key is curious. You have to be curious the whole time. You have to learn about the competition. What are the competition doing? How can I keep ahead of the competition? I spoke about being 10x better than your competition the whole time. You need to be so curious. You're learning, learning, learning. You're always reading. I try and read a book a week. You know, I don't necessarily get through a book a week, but I'm always wanting to learn more about entrepreneurship, venture capital. I read, you know, autobiographies of all these successful people. I try and learn from successful people. So that curiosity is a critical trait of an entrepreneur. So when we make an investment, I want to make sure all those C's are covered, that I'm investing in, and I make mistakes. I've made those mistakes, and I continue to make those mistakes, unfortunately. But I know what I'm looking for, and those C's I'm talking about there is what I would look for in the attitude of an entrepreneur.
Absolutely, we won't have to leave it, Jade. It's been absolutely beautiful. Clyde, thank you very much, Cheryl, for sharing those useful insights, which have certainly made a difference to the listener who is actually trying to make a difference in his or her life, you know, by coming to venture capital such as yourself. It has been absolutely beautiful. Let's reconnect. I want to take you on that idea of how to mystify mentors to a point where we have enough people who have the similar caliber, such as yourself, that would help up and coming entrepreneurs to really make a difference in this country. For I strongly believe that's where our solution is. Nothing else.
Yeah, thank you, Doctor, and thanks to your listeners.
You're most welcome. There was Clive Butkoff, who is a former CEO at Accenture in South Africa, as well as now. He's now MD at Conducive Capital, really giving us practical, doable insights that are so important in building the entrepreneurial mindset. We all know that for you to be successful, communication is critical. You have to be charismatic. You have to be able to sell the vision to your clients. You have to be courageous. You have to have that conviction. You have to be curious. You know, curiosity, obviously, as he puts it, read as much as possible. Read books about this, about that, about that, because that's how you get wisdom. And especially when you want to know more about competition. Yep, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it here. Craig, thank you very much. Harry, thank you very much. And thank you very much to you, the listener, who have been contributing to our comment line. Let's do this again next week. Like I said, be kind. It does not cost you anything. Shalom.